For me, it's not the act of the violence happening, it's the wounded person. In war movies, there's always some soldier resting up in a hospital bed with a broken rib, and, you know, maybe the love of his life walks in, and she, you know, leans in to kiss him, and he goes, oh, careful, careful. That turns me on.
Okay.
But for me, it's like the woundedness of it and the vulnerability and the bruise that's there. For some reason, that's a big turn on for me. Tim Roth bleeding out in the back seat in Reservoir Dogs. Like, that to me is oddly arousing. Like, he's panting and he's soaking in himself and he's, you know, there's like a shiver in his body. It turns me on in a weird way.
But first, a word from our sponsors.
Welcome to the Man Whore Podcast.
Shout out to the face eaters, to the ball jugglers, to the titty twisters, and the cock choppers. This is Billy Persida, and you're listening to the Man Whore Podcast, bringing you sex positive conversations every Wednesday for the past 10 years. This week on the show, I have got on former Naked News anchor, burlesque performer, penetrative artist. You know, she calls herself a conduit of the erotic. Laura Desiree is on the show this week. And I'm very excited to share that conversation with y'all in just a little bit. But first, folks, head on over to manwhorepod.com. to see me perform in New York City. I've got quite a few shows in the month of April coming up. I think I've got 3 next week. I will be performing with my pants on. I hope that's okay. But I'd love to see y'all there. Just like I loved seeing all the whoreheads who came on out to the Naked Comedy Show last Friday night. Shout out to Tracy, who she got all the comedians crumble cookies. Crumble is apparently one of these like TikTok cookie places. It was kind of an evil gift to give a bunch of comedians who were about to take their clothes off, be like, oh, hey, here's one last chance to get bloated. So like every comic just kept like staring and sniffing and smelling the cookies. And then once they got off stage, put their clothes back on, then they shoved it in their faces. It was very kind, very thoughtful. Thank you for that. But yes, manwhorepod.com. Come see me performs. I'm noticing being a little rusty at dating, and I went on a date on Sunday night from the apps. I felt like I pulled a suave one. We were wrapping up. We just finished talking about making out and like how awesome kissing is, and then we were like wrapping up the date. She goes downstairs to go to the bathroom, and I thought, oh, you know what? I'm gonna wait up here at the top of the stairs because the chemistry had been established. She's making, you know, we're making physical points of the contact, a lot of hand touching. A lot of eye contact, little like fun references to like maybe hooking up. She did apparently listen to episode 500, so she knows. So she goes down to the downstairs to the bathroom. I wait at the top of the stairs, and when I could hear her leave the bathroom, I slowly start walking down the stairs. I said some sort of pithy little line. She giggled, and when we were passing each other, I said, "But first this," leaned in, put my mouth on hers, and we had a nice stairwell makeout session. And it wasn't like this like aggressive, sloppy, like wild makeout. This was like a soft, grounding makeout. This was like our mouths had an opportunity to meet each other. I finally got to get my hands on her body as a way to show like, hey, this connection, that thing we were feeling before, that was real. So this is good. Though I am noticing, again, having had a long lapse in dating, having put myself on the sideline for a little bit, I forgot that like for me, a first date, a lot of it is like, how long can I go without saying the word gangbang? That's sometimes its own struggle. Fan whore appreciation moment. Let's do it. Let's get it done. I want to give a shout out to some members of my fan whore community on Patreon. I want to give a big thank you right now to Melissa Galonsky, Bleib Schlampig. You know what that means. Did y'all know that the word slutty is schlampig? Slam pig is slutty. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Thanks for being a member. And also shout out to Tracy B, the patron so nice. She pledged to me twice. Yeah, that's right. She's got two annual memberships. How many you got? Zero? Catch the fuck up. It's $2. It's $2. Give it to me. We're trying to hit 500 paid and free Patreon members by the 10-year podiversary on April 16th. Become a member today. Support the pod you love at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. That's Patreon, patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. Laura Desiree. Don't even know what to say here. This is just a killer conversation. I love it when the guest makes it easy for me. We went kind of all over the place on this one. We started a little heavy on the problem with men. And then we got into some fun stuff. I really enjoyed this. I think you are too. We're going to pay some bills and then have a chat with Laura.
There was a lot of, we don't do that. That's the hard line we don't cross. We get naked on camera to read you the news. But if I see any of you anchors on a cam site, if I see any of you anchors on, you know, a clip store, that's against... How's that?
Yeah, just a little closer. Yeah, you're fine.
That was a really hard line. But, you know, during the pandemic, when content creation just reached this fucking boom, there was only so much you could tell the anchors on that show. Because if we were comfortable to get naked for a fixed paycheck, we're obviously comfortable to pursue our own earnings as independent content creators.
Do you think that had to do more with control of the talent or just...
Of course it had to do with control of the talent, because all of us have this incredible skill set of being able to, you know, not just read a teleprompter, but host a purposeful conversation and also do it naked. And nakedness, nudity can be the hardest thing for any performer to kind of, you know, whether they want to leap that hurdle or not. Mm. You know,
you don't think it had to do with like protecting the image of the show?
Oh, come on.
Not so that like a producer can't be like, or that a critic can't say like, no. Oh, well, it's just a bunch of porn chicks.
Right.
Doing the news.
The news, the naked news had so many porn people on and off the show as like guest hosts that just wouldn't hold up. Mm-hmm. I think it really was about, we will lose these performers if we permit them into the Wild West that is run free and roam free in the world of porn. Mm. So what can we do? We can make sure that that's a hard line no one can cross, you know, and that keeps us within a sort of a fixed playing field.
And how many years ago did you stop with Naked News?
I stopped Naked News last year.
Last year. Okay, so recently.
About a year of just being out of it.
And were those rules still pretty much in place?
No. It was around the start of the pandemic, so maybe 2021. Mm-hmm. 2020, end of 2020, beginning of 2021, that Naked News launched their own fan sites as like a competitor with OnlyFans. And this was the Naked News Fan Zone, and then they eventually rolled out a website called Tempted, which was pretty much a direct competitor to OnlyFans. You can sell your content, clips, photo galleries, the opportunity to write directly to my inbox, the opportunity to order a custom video. Like, it's amazing how identical it was to OnlyFans. But then, of course, there was the rule, you're allowed to be on Tempted, but not on OnlyFans.
But you could be more, I'm just going to say pornographic, unless you have a better word to use.
No, explicit.
There.
Yeah. Explicit? Explicit is the one that came up a lot because.
So you could be more, you could be explicit now that we're going to get our 20%.
But there was still a push and pull in that.
Oh, really?
Because when we first launched the fan site for Naked News, again, there was this expectation that all we're doing is giving the fans an opportunity to hang out with their favorite anchor in a little bit more of an intimate setting. Mm. But we don't cross boundaries. We don't cross certain boundaries around, you know, sexual depictions, be it, you know, masturbatory content, right, be it penetrative content. We didn't do that. And over the years that the platform developed, you couldn't police it anymore. Mm-hmm. Nor should you. Right. I mean, who are you to say what someone's earning potential is on a website that's supposed to be their curated content? And we're dealing with nudity already. I mean, did it change a lot of the even balance that seemed to exist for a while. Of course, because once a few of the ladies on the team start doing a certain kind of content, those viewers are saying, well, they're doing it. Why aren't you doing it?
Yeah.
You know, they're doing it. Don't you want to try it? You'll get that anytime you offer content that you're making direct to a buyer. They're going to try and lead you into more.
Yeah. I mean, and that would be even when you're not within the Naked News ecosystems. Like,
right.
This chick, well, she does a custom for this much. Mm-hmm. And it's just a bunch of dudes fucking haggling. I don't understand. I never get women. I mean, I have a bad OnlyFans. It's fine. We all do now. Only men will haggle with me. That. Women won't haggle. They need to be reminded, like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm supposed to pay for this.
Yeah.
But the men, like, the haggling is absurd. It's, like, really just a one-gender problem.
It's the anonymity of being, well, it's being anonymous, first and foremost. I don't know what you look like. I don't know what your real name is. I can't come track you down. So there is that sort of heightened Hulk brain power of, well, I'm going to ask for what I want because I'll always be anonymous. Mm. So I can speak in a language that might be a little bit more assertive or a little bit more aggressive. But there is also, I like to reason it in my mind as a certain kind of blindness that a lot of men fall under the spell of when arousal sets in, and they're maybe not as aware of how they are composing themselves and composing their communication.
It's, they start a little hunching bit over, it becomes very caveman. It becomes more, very ooga booga.
Exactly. It has this bruteness to it where, you know, it's an intoxicating feeling. You know, I equate it to likely the fact that all the blood has left the brain. It's going elsewhere. Yeah. So this isn't, the brain isn't functioning as.
Yeah, but there's got to be a little bit of a bar to clear, because like when you're in the throes of masturbation is different from when you're just at bar. I emcee speed dating events on the side, and this happens every event. Every opposite sex event, every time I have to tell guys, hey, 4 comes after 3, 7 comes after 6. I have to explain why. Because if there's more men than women, there's going to be some blank numbers.
Yeah.
Which means they have a break, but they need to stay in rotation or they fuck my shit up, right?
Yeah.
So I always tell a dude, I was like, follow the number, not the woman. But every time they see like a number placard without tits, they're like, well, this number doesn't matter. And they keep moving. And I mean, last night I say, hey, everyone pay attention, because one of you is going to fuck up like this in front of everybody. And I'm going to make fun of you in front of everybody. And then as soon as the first round was over, I ring the bell and the guy who was at 15, he comes up to me. He's like, so I was at 15. Where do I go next? You know who doesn't struggle with this? Women. One time we had to do it in a chair, so we had to have the women rotate, and none of them fucked it up. And then when I do the gay speed dating events, those guys do it up. I don't know what it is about heterosexuality that like makes men fucking stupid.
Well, because I think heterosexuality in the male experience also comes with so much of the crushing masculine expectation, which is don't reveal vulnerability. Mm. Don't reveal emotion of really any kind other than maybe pride for thyself. Mm. And so, yeah, I can't imagine trying to keep all that in check. It would be fucking dizzying.
I also have the theory. I'm really abandoning any like faith in my gender, like slowly every day. I have my theory is that like there's also when we were teaching young men to succeed, achieve, get yours, be the best, because then there's all this like rewards you get, and some of the rewards is like women, family, right?
Yeah.
So when we do that, I think we like are teaching dudes to be blind to anyone else's like feelings. We turn their empathy brain off, because like go get yours. So that guy who's like, I'm here to meet whatever many women come to this event. There's like 15 women there. I'm here to meet 15 women, and it's my turn to go to the not woman table. But he's like, I don't do that because I got to get mine. So I'm just gonna skip that and go. Yeah, like that's something I think I observe a lot of.
So, like, do we recommend a frontal lobotomy at this point? Like, what is the best track to correcting that? I mean, I can put on a fucking posture collar and stand up straighter, but like, how do you begin to amend that?
Yeah, as kids, I think like through the way we educate them,
right?
Not just about like sex and what sex kind of should be or can be, and when you see higher emotional intelligence in a man, what is the differentiation between guy who is aware of these things and a more dweeby model that also understands all the things, but now too scared to do anything?
What are the differentiators?
I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this.
No,
let me put that. There's, you can sometimes do all the conscientiousness in a way or too much that then turns her off.
Right.
I've experienced that where like there, some women will go like, just fucking do it. And I'm like, I'm not going to choke you out without talking to you first.
I love this fucking question right here. Sincerity is the word that comes to me. Mm-hmm. I do question sincerity when I receive a robotic response from especially a heterosexual man. Mm-hmm. Well, is this okay? Am I doing that? I thank you for this correction. I will apply it to our future communication. I can't deal with that. I need sincerity. Mm-hmm. And I don't want men to think that we need them to respond with that submissive, yes, I understand. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. Like, you know, it's like a fucking hostage letter is being read. Like, to me, there is not, there's not the sincerity in it there.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that comes from fear, which I think is a right. good starting point. I mean, this is, we're talking about stuff that takes years or decades to do change. Mm. So I think when Me Too hits, I think there's a cluster of men. There's a swath of men who were like, I don't want to rape anybody. I didn't know that was a rape. And now my hands are up being like, maybe I don't know what's what. And I'm just trying to not hurt anybody, but also get some pussy. And, and I think when we're talking about what do we teach like young men, it's like, well, we teach like my future, my nephew, what we're going to teach him is different. What I think we need to do with the present adult male population.
We've put so much pressure on it because, yes, there were some very serious fucking crimes that got brought into light and, yes, changed the culture. I mean, I hope it did. But now we're living in this world of tension where it's like walking on fucking eggshells when we're trying to just connect with each other. Mm. And even this idea of someone saying, well, I want to be choked. And then you being the choker saying, oh, I don't know how I'm supposed to. But I feel like there's so much tension. What if we were to just approach it a little bit more casual in the moment? Like, well, why do you want that?
Well, in that type of a situation, it's like we're in bed. I don't mind if someone says, choke me, do it now. It's like afterwards, we're like, well, I was just waiting for you to choke me. And I was that's not going to happen if we've never talked about
it. Well, we have to be responsible for our own desires, too.
Yeah.
We can't expect people to read our fucking minds.
Yeah.
You know, that's in the bedroom. I swear to God, we might be so in sync with our bodies signaling each other like, oh my God, I can feel that tension of almost close to climax. I can feel it from both ends of this. But that doesn't mean we can read each other's minds. We still have to communicate. We still have to voice it. Mm. And yet we think that the body just takes care of all that talk. No, it does not. No, it does not. More so than ever, you know, now that I'm turning 35 on April 6th. So it's a big one. Yeah. But I remember, say, my early 20s, which was before the Me Too movement, flirting felt a little different. Now, maybe I was also in a bit of a different place. I was perhaps much more aggressive and much more of a cutthroat flirter. Mm. And I used to, you know, pounce a little bit harder. But I've noticed now there is a bit of a step back that happens if I do lay on the flirt. Mm. Maybe it's because I cut my hair short and I stand 6 feet tall and it's very intimidating. And I didn't realize that when I had, you know, a beautiful, long, girly mane of hair. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I do feel a step back. Even if I'm flirting with no intention of pursuing, I flirt all the time.
Okay.
I'm not pursuing to steal you into a bathroom and blow you. Like, I just love, I love the exchange of flirt. I love it. It feeds me. It's so fun. It's human. It's what, you know, I brings me such pleasure.
Yeah.
But there is a fear around that. So what do I do about it? Well, I if I sense it, quite honestly, if it's just a casual moment, I graciously back away and I say, okay, I get it. I'm going to retreat because I don't ever want to push someone out of their comfort zone. Mm. But let's say I am pursuing this person. Then I will say to them, hey, are you all right with this? I'm noticing a bit of a change in your temperament. Is my come on too much?
What do you think that is? Are they nervous that they're misreading you?
I've never heard that from them. I usually get a, oh, what? No. And I get that, you know, denial of anything that might be a confession of, yes, I'm uncomfortable. Mm. And that to me is heartbreaking. Mm. You can just say it. Yeah. But I guess that means divorcing your own fucking masculinity if you were to, huh?
Well, you walk through a party, like I've seen you walk through a party.
Yeah.
And it's very different than when the 5'7" chick walks through the party. Like everyone stops, is like, oh, it's former naked news anchor Laura Desiree.
I think that's so ridiculous. I mean, we're talking about a person that just happens to be in a body the size of a skyscraper, you know? Like, there's nothing I can do about that. When I was a kid, all I wanted was to stunt my growth. That's it. I remember trying to research everything, early days of the internet. Does coffee really stunt your growth? How can I stop this from happening?
So now I see the origin of this.
Okay. Right. My coffee addiction is I'm sitting here pounding one. But I was like, what are the ways to stop this from happening? And my body just kept growing. I just kept getting taller and taller and taller. I was 6 feet tall at 12.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yes, that's a lot of person to present to anything.
That's a lot of invitations to sports teams to turn down.
Oh my gosh. I did them all. Volleyball, basketball, you know, I did all of that. And I did like it.
Why didn't you want to be tall at that when you were younger?
Because you can't hide.
Okay.
You can't hide. And as an identical twin, my sister and I were both 6 feet tall. And you just can't hide. And those years when you're like 12 to 15 are the grossest years. You're so sweaty. You're so disorganized. Your body has no sense of itself. And you're very self-conscious. And all you want to do is hide. And you can't hide. You're just so fucking huge. And so for me, there was no place to hide. And, you know, I come from a family losing a mother at a very young age. And so being 10 years old and having no place to hide when shit got scary, I still couldn't hide because I was so big. Like,
what were you trying to hide from?
A lot of eyes and attention, which is funny because I've made a living
on eyes and attention.
I had to flip it into a superpower. I had to flip it into something that I could create for and something that I could comfortably express myself in. But that was a long journey that was very uncomfortable for many years. What did I want to hide from? I wanted to hide from being something that made people uncomfortable. I knew that I was a young person that had gone through a very unusual experience, and I didn't want to make people uncomfortable. There's the girl that, you know, grew up in hospitals. There's the girl that, ooh, lost a parent. I didn't want to freak people out. But I can't hide anywhere.
Right.
You know, like there was no way of masking into it.
Yeah. How did being so tall so quick and young, like how did that affect your sense of self and beauty?
I was always said to be older than I was.
Okay.
And I certainly used that to an advantage by attending a lot of events that I was passably of age for, a lot of rock concerts, a lot of punk shows, you know, bars I wasn't supposed to be in. It was fun. I always wanted to be older. I wanted to be shorter and older. Always. Now it's like the opposite, right? But I wanted to be shorter and I wanted to be older than I was. I was so ashamed of being young for so long because people would see me and assume, this is a much older woman. This is, you know, an adult. And I felt that way in many ways because of life experience. But I knew the truth of it. I was still a child. I was still a kid. And I didn't have all of the life experiences that would really let me walk with the stride of an adult, but I wanted to pull it off. And I remember entering into a lot of, be it social surroundings where things like flirtation were more available. Flirtation with an older age group was more available. And it informed a lot. It informed a lot about social dynamics. I remember being very observant and thinking, oh, this is how adults talk to each other. Oh, this is kind of weird. You know, this is interesting. We talk about things that are applicable to the news and applicable to, you know, our world. And I had to stay up to date on that. It actually piqued my curiosity to be more involved in that.
When you said you were 6 foot at 12, and you were talking about hiding and we're talking attention, the other kind of pubescent age thing I've heard some women talk about who develop early is like if they develop like really big breasts at a really young age and then being treated older. And I've also heard one hide, though there was like hiding from like that adult attention. It sounds like you were trying to go towards it.
Yeah, in a way, I felt more comfortable around the adults than I did, say, other students in my teenage years. And I think that's from being raised as a friend to my father as opposed to a daughter. You know, like, I don't know what the fuck would you do if you were stuck with two 12-year-old, 6-foot-tall, identical twin daughters and you had to raise them on your own? I mean, to him, he was like, well, he wanted to keep his career in radio, which I'm so happy that he did because it's given me this wealth of knowledge and amazing jukebox requests. But, you know, he raised us as friends of his. And I got along with adults so much more than I did with kids. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand the rest of the kids in my age group. Also, if you go through the trauma of losing a parent, I mean, we're talking about learning about life and death.
You were how old?
I was 10.
You're 10.
You're learning about, you know, the Disney presents it as the circle of life, Hakuna Matata, you know, Lion King. But like to actually experience that as a young person, that's a kind of education that is beyond a conversation. That's experiential. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I knew about the great emotional feelings very early on of, oh my God, loss, and oh my God, anxiety, and oh my God, panic. And I still deal with that shit today. I still grapple with, you know, trying to ground myself in those moments because that'll have an indelible effect on me for life. But I needed to play in the adult arena because they got it.
Yeah.
To a degree, at least, you know?
Did you have like another like female influence like after your mom passed or... Did your dad have to handle the talks?
My dad had to handle the talks. He tried to elect some women in the family, like aunts and family friends. And I was resistant. I was so resistant to it. And it wasn't weird, like the parent trap, like stamping and kicking. I don't want dad to have a girlfriend. I didn't want to take on another female. To be a role model. I had movie stars to do that. You know, we watched movies, so I had movie stars to inform me what a woman was supposed to be.
So, and then what role does your dad play in informing you on how your body's going to change and sex and dating and some of that?
The poor guy. The poor man. I mean, we would run from him top speed in the other direction. Anytime he would say, do you know what a tampon is? Do you know what your menstrual cycle is? Yeah. I mean, you couldn't expect school to fill you in on that because...
I'm surprised you all ran away, but you were both 6 foot tall at 12.
I know.
You both could have just held him down.
We could have held him down.
And been like, shut up.
And been like, we don't want to hear it. But instead it was like, bolt. Let's get out of here.
You beat up your dad together.
Yeah. We could have literally, we could have taken that guy down. And instead we were like, get the fuck out of here. Which, you know, you go to a therapy and they'll tell you that's fight or flight, blah, 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 whatever. But, you know, we didn't want to have that conversation. And it wasn't until, I've told this story before, it wasn't until we were on a road trip and he had to power lock all the doors while we were on the open highway. And he was like, we have to talk about this now, girls. We got to talk about it. Like, do you know what's happening to your bodies right now? We must have been like 13. And we got through it. We got through it. I still declined from actually telling him when certain things had happened, like I got my period or I lost my virginity. Yeah. I didn't tell anyone about those things.
What about your sister?
I didn't even tell my sister.
Okay.
It was so weird to me. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm separate from them. I'm separate from my sister. Because when you're an identical twin, this is like a whole wonderland of philosophy. When you're an identical twin, there's nothing like it. Mm. You believe you're the same person until those differences start happening, including getting your period. Like, what? It was crazy to me. And it was scary, of course. Anyone who bleeds will tell you that. The first time, it's like, what's going on? But I knew I was becoming something separate from her. And I couldn't bring it to her. I couldn't tell her. I thought this will crush her. So I kept it to myself.
It's so interesting because you're like striving towards adulthood as young as you can. And yet you also like don't want anyone to like seem to know about it.
Right.
You know, like it was going to be your private little journey.
Because when you lose a parent, the family is threatened to fall apart. How much further can the family fall apart? Mm. We've already lost one.
Can the family handle me having sex for the first, you know.
Can they handle me even wanting to do things that don't involve them?
Sure.
Because one of the survival tactics we had was to band together so tight. We, as a little trio, did everything together. We watched movies every night. We went, you know, to dinner every night. We were very, we even called it the little family. Like, that's so cultish, the little family. But we were best friends. And I had urges and I had, you know, desires to step out and experience things, whether it was to go on a walk with a boy who was a couple grades older than me in school. I wanted to do things like stay up on the phone all night with some guy that worked at the record store. You know, I wanted to do those.
There used to be records, and we used to talk on the phone.
Okay, and it was a landline, and
that's like that's when there's a cord that goes from the phone to the wall.
Yeah, just, but you can curl your finger around it, and it's very coquettish.
Go watch an 80s movie,
and then maybe at, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning, when you're in the middle of just breathing to each other under the pillows, your father picks up the phone and says, "Laura, it's time to go to bed." And, you know, it's rather sobering.
Those are like those college-age romance where like you whether it's on the phone when we had cell phones or if we were just like in bed and we had our like 1 30-second sex session and then we talked for 4 hours till it was like 3 a.m.
Yes.
And you're like, what the fuck? That's young love.
And that it's so young love.
Love that.
It's so young love. The whole, I just want to hear you breathe. Like, just stay on the phone till I fall asleep thing. Oh, my God.
Start coming up with questions that don't make sense. But you just want to keep talking.
Stupid observations that literally
What do you think of the War of 1812? Yeah. I just want to hear your voice.
Yeah, I just need to keep you talking to me because I'm this obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Although, honestly, I still love like that, can I say? Like, that's never stopped.
I'm still, I feel like I hit a peak of that a couple years back, and now I'm just like, I feel like all that other heroin out there isn't as good.
It's not as
so
good.
I almost am like, I don't even know if I want any heroin. If I can't have the best, I know what the best tastes like.
Yeah.
And now why would I sell for any of this shit? So listen, I'm still almost like chasing that high.
It's one of the highest dopamine hits you can, it's the most... It's the highest natural dopamine hit you can get, falling in love. Then it's topped by things like, you know, methamphetamine and cocaine. But the highest is falling in love.
Where does TV fame and glory fall in all of that?
So low, honestly. That is so much lower. Like, it's so much lower. It's so funny. Growing up, I used to be like, I know what would make me happy. It's kind of gross and cringy to say this. But, like, of course, there was an era where I just wanted to be famous.
Sure.
I just wanted to be a star and my life would be okay. I don't even know what that means anymore. Because now you've got the social media influencer.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that even mean?
We have even worse. We have the podcaster.
Ooh, gross.
Even
worse. Ooh, gross, right? Like, there's all these variations of what it means to be famous. And it's a gross thing to even try and gauge. How do you define it? And I didn't know what it meant even back then. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I've dedicated my life to building an audience in many ways, whether it's burlesque, whether it's been, you know, the naked news work, whether it's independent content creation.
What I heard was you've dedicated your life to being naked.
Yeah.
I think that's what I heard there.
I mean, I've dedicated my life to being naked. That is a huge reality.
Was naked news the first thing or did burlesque come first?
Burlesque came first.
Okay.
And burlesque, nude modeling, a lot of naked performance work. I loved it and I love the power it yields. I love the effect it has. I love that even in our, you know, tech-obsessed world that we live in today, it's still shocking to see someone get naked in front of you, especially if it's outside of the bedroom.
Yep.
I love that effect. And I do think it's, you know, it's very much a sign of where our comfort is with our own nakedness.
Yeah.
So it's as much as I love the effect, my heart breaks a little bit because it's nice when it's applause, but when it turns someone into themselves to make them question, oh my God, am I okay? Am I worthy? Am I like that kills me. Mm. That breaks my heart. A naked body is a naked body.
So the first time you do naked news, I got to imagine maybe it wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was more of, oh my God, I'm on TV versus, oh, I'm naked.
Yeah.
Right. So then burlesque would have been your first more exposing performance.
Totally. That was the launch into like sharing nakedness in front of a live audience.
So what was the first time like that you exposed and you're taking it off in front of a whole crowd?
God, it was so overly ambitious, which is so me. It was at Parkside Lounge, which is a bar.
Wow.
Yeah. Parkside Lounge in the East, Lower East Side.
It's on Houston and like Avenue D.
Yeah. It's gross and great all in one. But I decided I was going to do a striptease to that really great rock and roll guitar of Link Wray in Rumble. It's a killer track. But I also decided I would be handcuffed in like some Houdini tribute and the key would be in my mouth and then I would take the key out and undo the cuffs and undress myself. Don't ever attempt this. Why did I put up so many barriers?
For your first time?
To just share my nudity. Yeah. Like, that's so, it's weird and symbolic. Like, was I even comfortable doing it? I don't know. I put all these, you know, blockades up. I ended up just ripping the costume off myself. I don't think the handcuffs ever even came off. I think I stayed cuffed the whole time, and it looked like more of like an escape from a hostage situation rather than like a rhythmic dance.
And yet someone in the audience was still getting aroused.
Of course they
somehow
were. I'm kind of getting aroused thinking about that as an interesting performance piece, and maybe I'm going to revisit that.
Well, I think now you have like you have the skill set now to maybe pull it off.
Well,
for your first burlesque performance, it seems like a lot.
No, it was like an actual like escape mishap. Like I couldn't get out of it, but I do love that scene in movies where someone is bound, gagged, and tied up, and they find their way to get out of it. Whether they start chewing at their binds or whether they start chiseling with a little piece of like a scraping of a key. Like, I kind of like that moment.
Do you ever see Gerald's Game?
Gerald, yes!
I didn't finish it because I passed out.
Yes!
I was walking, I felt myself get lightheaded at that scene.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole setup is fucking great.
I'm in bed watching it. I feel lightheaded in bed. I get up to try to go get water. I lived in a duplex at the time with like six people. And I can't get up the stairs. I kind of fall back and I just yell help. It's like 1 a.m.
You had a response to it that I just saw here. You just
I went, I probably, the hair's going up again because like I couldn't handle seeing that type of gore. And then my roommate comes out and apparently after they all got me water, he was like, yeah, me and Laquan were fucking and I heard you yell help. And I was like, did he say help? Damn. So like they stopped fucking so that they could come take care of
Stop
me.
It.
Good
From
roommate.
Watching Good roommate. A movie.
Gerald's Game was, I have never finished it. I won't do it.
It actually doesn't finish great, so you don't need to. I love that you wrote it right to the high point and then fucked off.
Yeah,
that's good.
I was not strong enough.
Oh yeah, good. Keep saying that. I love it. Ah.
But when you're like, I can't figure this thing. I'm just gonna rip it off. Yeah. What did it feel like that first time you were exposed to an audience? Your bare body's there, and you're like, oh my god, they can see my tits. They can see my.
I
don't know what you wore.
Breathing so heavy. It was an open mouth. Pant of, oh, that feels good.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt good. It felt so good. And in a way, like when you get that perfect temperature going and the stream of the shower blasting you, mm-hmm. the moment that the clothes finally came off of me, it was like I've nailed that temperature. And it was that moment where, ooh, you're surrounded in steam and ooh, it feels good, right? But it's just spotlight and eyes. And it felt so good. There wasn't a hesitation at that point. I felt kind of foolish for the lead up getting to that point because once I entered it, oh my God, I loved it.
Mm.
I loved it. I remember standing straighter than I ever did. Like I was taller all of a sudden. It was
6'1".
I was 6'1". You know, we stretched for it. It was great.
Yeah.
I love it.
But you never got into stripping, like traditional stripping.
I did it a couple times. I had so many invitations after Naked News really started ramping up for me. All these
featured dancing part. So was that allowed? Like were you all allowed
eventually
to do a little bit of stripping on the side?
Yeah, and you would do it. You would do it very quietly. You'd
like,
be
like, I'm trying to get a car.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You'd be like, yeah, I'm not doing this, but totally. I did pop ups in a couple of different clubs, and it was I loved that because it's a longer format than burlesque, right? Like when you're doing a feature. Your dance set, like you've got 15 minutes up there. Burlesque, of course you can take 15, but they'd rather you take like a five.
Yeah,
five
but like
six.
Also when you're feature dancing at a strip club, they also don't want you to dress up like a scary clown.
Right. Well, I would find that little sweet middle ground because I do like, I like the shock appeal and I like to bend what arousal might look like for folks. I'm interested in challenging them because for me, my arousal is very different. It's not the I'm not into Channing Tatum's muscles. Oh. I'm into Steve Buscemi's strange and transformative face. You know what I mean? Like, I'm interested in Tim Roth bleeding out in the back seat in Reservoir Dogs. Like, that to me is oddly arousing. Like, he's panting and he's soaking in himself and he's, you know, there's like a shiver in his body. Mm. It turns me on in a weird way.
Do you get into Vore?
Vore.
Freshman year, I've never really been on FetLife. I was on there for like a week my freshman year of college, and I just searched NYU because I didn't know what else to do. So I was like, all right, let me see if there's anyone else from NYU here.
Right.
And I found one chick who had NYU, like her username. We exchanged some messages, and she's like, well, I'm really into Vore. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I had just had sex for the first time like 4 months prior, right? It's like, I don't know what, you know? So she sends me some clips, and then we also said, well, we would get lunch at Kimmel at one of the dining halls. I didn't think I was interested physically, but I was like, oh, let me meet someone else who is like a sexual being. Because I knew I was a sexual being, but I didn't know any of the language. Yeah. I wasn't listening to Dan Savage. I didn't know nothing. I just knew I was searching for something like that. So I watched the clips, and she sent me clips from like Saw and Hostel.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, remember in Hostel where like the Achilles?
Yeah,
she sent me that clip, or Queen of the Dam where she's pulling out the intestines.
Yeah.
That's what gets her wet.
Yeah, I like that stuff.
Okay.
But for me, it's not the act of the violence happening. It's the wounded person.
I just really like a wounded human that can't defend themselves against my 6 foot tall aggression.
I love, like, it's absolutely like a kinky headspace, but I do like, tell me where it hurts. Am I permitted to press on it just a little bit? I will care for you, but I also want to know where it hurts. Mm-hmm. Because I might, like a broken rib. In war movies, there's always some soldier resting up in a hospital bed with a broken rib. And, you know, maybe the love of his life walks in and she, you know, leans in to kiss him. And he goes, oh, careful, careful. That turns me on.
Okay.
It's not.
But it's not the broken rib. It's not the, it's like, I don't need this.
It's the wounded.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I think she was turned on by seeing the blood gush.
Yeah. Okay. I get that. It is very exciting to watch, and I'm not averse to seeing it. I'm not like, I don't close my eyes. I'm not squeamish about it.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like the woundedness of it and the vulnerability and the bruise that's there. For some reason, that's a big turn on for me. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I tried so hard with, there was like years and years later, like in my 20s, I matched with someone on Bumble, and like she was also into Vore, and I'm like, round two, like, because back then I thought that's a hard limit, and then it was like, oh well, if you're hot enough, I'll try something again. She's very pretty, so it never happened, but I was contorting to find a way to like fit into her fantasy so we could hook up. So she's like, I don't even think I'm into sex. I think I just want to butter someone up. I was like, well, you know, I'd be willing to like wear whatever and put me in a thing and you can slather butter on me. I don't know, like, can we make out, you know? what weird thing do I gotta do for your tongue to be in my mouth?
You know what though? I'm happy that you've you know, entered into some experimental opportunities. I do think it's important.
Oh yeah, no, experimental is a real kind way to explain my exploits.
Well, most people never would. They would never permit themselves to go beyond even thinking about it. They wouldn't share it, you know, verbally in conversation. They would even less likely to pursue it in the physical realm.
What's a fantasy that you had and that was maybe a little out there and you finally pursued it, and like you got to be like, oh wow, I've jerked off this for how many years, and I'm gonna go do it.
I remember public sex was a big one, and I mean like in the outdoors, you know, in the great wide open, without being seen. And then there's public sex being seen, and then there's little small notches like roadhead.
Yeah,
that's been fun to give and get.
I like how the one that like is the. The most riskiest to your life is the one you're like, hey, you know, a little roadhead. A little almost death.
Yeah.
Nothing like when the guy can't, like, forgets. He's like mid-blowjob and forgets which one's the accelerator, which one's
the brake. Right, right. Oh, like a little roadhead. I love the breakaway from the restaurant table to go have sex in the public bathroom and then go back. Like, I love that. I love the risky, there isn't enough time to do this, but we're going to fucking make it happen. Mm-hmm. So I think seizing if I feel it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm really horny right now. I love that I've had instances where I've said, okay, I just have to, let's go. And we've done it.
Amazing.
That to me is a fucking turn on. Huge.
was the first time doing something like that nervous, or how did it feel? What was it?
It's like a heist, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, we're driving on the I-90 and there's a gas station and we just can't keep our hands off each other on the road. Cannot stop. Like, it's stupid. It's getting to a point where it is dangerous. Let's just pull over and use this gas station bathroom. But how are we going to get both of us in there? Let's pretend my contact lens has fallen behind my eye or something, and I need you to help me with it. And then you just, you clutch that sink lip as hard as you can, and you just get fucking rocked.
Yeah.
And then you try and compose yourself, which is breathless and flushed and so fucking obvious to anyone. And then you scream with laughter and roar all the way back to the car as little by little that load releases out of you. Like, I went there, okay? I know. I know.
That was great.
Resonant? I know.
It brought me back to the time I had sex on a bus going back to New Jersey.
Yeah! See?
And then I was like, she met my mom with my...
See?
Cum seeping out of her.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that that's absolutely hot.
Yeah.
You know, you roll down the windows of the car.
I haven't thought about that in a long
time. You need to think about these things. You have to preserve them in your mind.
Yeah, they're there, but they pop out in like wonderful moments like this.
Yes.
You know, until I write the book, you know, it's this is how I'll.
Are you writing the book?
Yeah, there's too many books in my head. I need to. I've been thinking about if I made more money, I'd hire like a dominatrix, but like to be a life dom. I'm like, we can maybe do a thing. I more like need you to just tell me what the fuck to do. And maybe you'll send me a picture of a titty as a reward. I just need someone to be like, okay, today you're going to reorganize the closet and that fucking wooden chest, and we're going to get that done,
There's automated options now, you know, that you could, I don't know if there's a dom one. They should so make that. Like a scheduler or like a daily planner, but can also like talk to you in a really aggressive tone about accomplishing the tasks of your day.
Like I want a life dom who just says like, you can't jerk off until you write 1,000 words.
Right. Turn it in. Let me see it.
Until you finish that book proposal, I'm going to lock you up in the cage. And that's not my kind of kink.
Okay.
So like that, like I need punishments that don't turn me on. I need punishments I actually don't want to happen. So I don't want to be in a cock cage for very long.
Right.
So I will get fucking writing.
Okay, but
that's what I need.
With AI ramping up as it is, I know, but like I know that there are content creators that are using a lot of like AI to respond to, say, their sexting requests or any of their correspondence. Sure. So like, boom.
But then there's that whole lawsuit that's going on. I'm very curious to see what happens with that.
Which one? Which AI lawsuit?
The one with all the whiny dudes from OnlyFans who found out that they're not talking to the actual chick.
Honey. Which,
if you're not told, I kind of get, but I'm curious, like, legally how that's going to play out. Because, like, does that then require that in your bio it says, like, some of your chats might be responded to by AI?
Right.
Because in theory, right, the whole thing you said was you're selling access to me.
Right.
So if they believe that they have access to you, I'm just curious how the law is going to play out on this. When I saw it, it was the same thing I thought when 10, 12 years ago, some dude sued a bar for having like ladies drink for free night. And I was like, sounds like a whiny bitch, but also I'd like to see how this plays out.
That is so funny to me. I mean, look at how we have fast tracked our workplaces in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And men especially, y'all have been the fucking captains of efficiency when it comes to automating business and that experience. But I guess when we're fulfilling your most intimate desires and requests, oh no, God forbid, right? God forbid our visuals aren't enough for you. God forbid. I get it. I can see both sides.
I've heard you talk about, use the phrase penetrative art.
Penetrative art, yes. Penetrative.
What is penetrative art?
Penetrative art is any performance, whether it's live or whether it's captured for film and viewed later. Penetrative art is, you know, the art and act of inserting something.
Mm. Are you avoiding using the word porn?
Yeah. Is that the line in the sand? Because I'll do things like a burlesque act where I pull a giant feather boa out of my pussy. Would we not call that a penetrative act? So to make that the classification,
we
got to
ask the magicians. On that one.
I don't know if that's really the classification of porn. I don't agree with that at all. I think penetrative art is anything that involves putting something inside of you. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of fun doing art of that nature in various live performances and in numerous ways.
What's one of your favorite penetrative art pieces that you've done?
I do this zombie act on stage where it's usually when I've just shaved my head, I'll try and book this act because it just looks great. And I'm covered in scabs head to toe. And, you know, the white out lenses, and I come out of a bathtub, and it's that very staccato movement. Oh, wow. And, you know, I'm crawling around on the stage and I'm starving. You can tell there's a hunger. You can hear it, actually. There's a starvation in me right now. And I'm looking to eat something, and there's nothing around, so I disembowel myself. And what I do is I pull my intestines out of my pussy, but really they're made.
You really are a vore person.
I'm a vore person.
I think you were avoiding saying that earlier.
I have video of this. This is some vore shit. And yes, they're fake. I'm not actually pulling human intestines out, but I pull them out, and then I eat those, and that's always very effective.
What is the intestine made of?
Someone's gonna cap this idea. They're gonna take this, and it's a good one. You take nude colored stockings, okay, and you fill them with different amounts of cotton balls that you tie off to make sausage link shapes.
Oh, so you're like fake eating.
And
okay,
then you soak them in blood.
All right.
Fake blood, and then you insert
with you,
them.
I think I got to clarify.
It could be, who knows? And then you insert them into a large condom, like a magnum, and then you push those deep inside of you. Mm-hmm. And then when the time is right, you slowly pull them out of you. And yeah, you suck the blood out of them because the cotton balls are absorbent, so it makes for a moisture. And you flail them around, and sometimes the blood hits people. Like, it's fucking great.
People pay to see this, everybody.
Yeah,
this
is they pay for this shit during Halloween. It's a great one.
I just want to visualize the face of the guy in the audience who's like, I paid, I didn't know. It would
Be
like
I
this.
Didn't know she does this.
My first burlesque show I went to was like Stanley Kubrick themed. And we closed.
I've done that.
You've done that?
I've done a Stanley Kubrick theme.
Which movie?
I did How I Learned to and Love the Bomb. Dr.
Strangelove.
Strangelove. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was, what's his face? With the glove and the glove that attacks him.
I
and
always
self
fall asleep in the middle of that movie.
Oh,
so
my
I've
God.
I've never finished.
I can't even do his fucking name right now, which is a shame. Dr. Strangelove, How I Learned to Stop, you know, Fearing and Love the Bomb.
The bomb, yeah.
But the character with the gloved hand that then goes rogue, the gloved hand goes rogue and undresses me and eventually, you know, has some fun with my body. It's fucking fun.
I can handle that.
Yeah.
Sounds fun. You know, it's less fun watching them close the entire night with Clockwork Orange doing that scene.
Yeah, doing that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was my introduction to the art form.
That's hardcore. That's a strange introduction.
Yeah.
That's a very hardcore introduction. And that's not generally the overall definition. I mean, burlesque is, of course, so transformative. And there's so many avenues and there's so many political opportunities to make commentary and comedy. But burlesque, as most of the world knows it, is, you know, a classical, whimsical costume that is moving to an instrumental track. And, you know, the clothing is coming off rhythmically with a teasing matter. That's usually how we know it.
Yeah. But penetrative art.
Penetrative
is that
art.
What you would also call like performances you do at these like sex parties around New York City?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's such
And does it ever go to the point where it's like a sex show? Like does this ever involve like somebody fucking you?
Does it ever you know what? Like if you're doing a Marie Antoinette act and we're talking about excess, because that visual and that aesthetic is like the cake and the pastries and the this, and a champagne bottle comes out and you're so romanced by the champagne bottle, before you taste it, you need to make love to it.
Of course.
Don't do it with the wrapping around the lid of it still, of the neck of it still. I learned that the hard way.
No.
And that metallic wrapper that sits around the neck of the bottle can be just a conduit of micro tears like you've never known before. So that's, you know, get that entire foil wrapper off of it. But that's the kind
of... How was that doctor visit?
Oh my gosh. Well, it was very obvious a few hours afterwards. I was like, that doesn't feel right. And, you know, you want to make sure that everything is... It was just a lot of no action in there for a while. Uh-huh. You know, no action in there. Make sure that you're, you know, eating right and not involving it in any way beyond, you know, some self-care.
I could imagine a doctor visit and you say like, well, what was in there? And you were like, you know, the wrapper at the top of a champagne bottle?
Exactly.
And then they just stare at you like, what the fuck?
And they're like,
lady?
Are you also in a relationship with Johnny Depp? And I'm like, no, that was not me. Like, you know.
And my last cue to you is before we wrap up with plugs, yeah, is 69ing. Yeah.
I hate it. I hate 69. I hate it. It's such an overrated position. I think it's so dumb. It's just for optics. It's just, it doesn't work for me. If I'm giving, I am giving. If I am getting, shut the fuck up. I am getting, and I will take all of it from you. I don't want this like half-assed, bleary. People say, but you're so connected during it. No. I cannot enjoy myself because I'm working on you, and I cannot work on you because I'm also distracted by my own pleasure. I want one or the other.
Okay.
That's me.
Solid answer.
And I'm 6 feet tall. It's really hard to line up.
Oh, yeah. That also would make it
it's
very difficult.
Really hard to line up. Like, fucking just try it. Map it out on your floor. It's not easy.
Well, Laura, thanks for making time to come on all the way out to Bushwick.
I know.
Happy to have you out here. Where can people go to find you, follow you, send you AI-generated erotic images of Steve Buscemi, you know?
Oh, I can't wait to receive.
You are not the first woman to say, like, I this feels weird to say, but I think Steve Buscemi's really hot.
He's so hot.
I have heard so many women say that.
He was a former New York fireman.
And he looked fucking weird then, too.
Yeah, I love weird. That's what I want. I love weird. You can find me everywhere on the internet, LauraXDesiree.me. And, of course, on social media, LauraXDesiree. On Twitter, the Laura Desiree. But I'm everywhere. Just type Laura Desiree.
Fantastic.
You'll find it.
And then do you have any of these... erotic readings coming up?
Well, when's this thing live?
next week.
Okay, great. April 6th at the Red Pavilion.
Oh, for your birthday?
For my birthday.
Oh, that's nice.
We have an erotic reading event in Brooklyn at the Red Pavilion. It's called Eros Unbound, and I would love to welcome everyone.
Fantastic. Well, Laura, thanks again. And why don't you go ahead and say goodbye to everybody?
Everyone, I love you. I miss you. I'm already thinking about you. So please be in touch. And until next time.
We want to hear your thoughts on this week's show in the episode discussion channel in the Champagne Room. The Champagne Room is our super free, super fun, very sex positive Discord server. We don't just talk about the Man Whore podcast in there. We have channels about sharing sex stories, sharing sex toy recommendations, talking about relationships. We have channels about gaming and music and parenting. It's just a really, really fun community. And we want you to be a part of it. Join us right now. Introduce yourself today at manwhorepod.com/discord or click the link in the schnotes. Got a question? Have a quandary? Need some advice? You can send me an email with your questions or with your comments or criticisms or titty pictures to manwhorepod@gmail.com. I'm running out of Stay Slutty panties, so you're going to want to go to manwhorepod.com to get your Man Whore podcast merch ASAP. We got the Stay Slutty panties, but we got those pegging shirts. We've got a bunch of buttons and stickers. I know it took me almost 10 years, but we finally have like a proper merch store where you can simply and easy buy some gear. One more time, manwhorepod.com. But the best way you can support the work that I'm doing is by joining my Patreon community and enjoying a slew of great rewards. I mean, there are hundreds of bonus episodes over there, a ton of behind-the-scenes posts and private writings, and you also get access to community spaces like The Peep Show. Become a member today, support the pod you love at patreon.com/manwhorepodcast. And if you don't really like the whole monthly debit thing, if you're not a Patreon person, if you really can't be bothered to make an account of a thing, my Venmo, my Cash App, my PayPal, they're in the schnotes. You want to give me money? There's a way to do it. It's all in the schnotes. It's all in the schnotes. Hey, it's all in the schnotes. Ah, all in the schnotes. It's all in the schnotes. Where's it go down? Down in the schnotes. Hey, goes down in the schnotes. Sometimes in the peep show, but it also is in the schnotes. You'll be happy in my 10-year podiversary month of April 2024. We got some exes. We got some exes. We've got an ex-Tinder match that has made a spicy career for herself and at the same time actually gave me some answers. We got some great ones coming up, everybody. I'm really excited about it. For now, stay slutty.